Hello, I'm Joanne Gallagher, your Think Future podcast host. This week, Tesla Collier joins us to share her experience taking a multidisciplinary approach to strategic design. She is especially focused in the intersection between sustainability and design technology. Join us in a minute to find out how Tesla does it. This podcast is brought to you by Arcons, a global leader pioneering solutions and services to the AEC and manufacturing industries who support digital transformation for the built environment and smart manufacturing. Visit arcons.net to learn more about how Arcons are helping organizations design, build, and solve through digitalization. From Arcons to you, welcome to our Think Future podcast series. Each week, we'll share conversations with industry leaders from around the world to find out how they're thinking future. Subscribe to Arcons Think Future for access to more episodes, interviews, and profiles. Tesla Collier is the Design Technology Manager at HNTB. She has a bachelor's in architecture from the University of Honduras and has worked in the AEC industry for over 25 years. Tesla actively works with her users to elevate their knowledge baseline to improve their skills on multiple software platforms. She is constantly seeking new avenues of technology to improve design workflows possible to conceive, visualize, and adapt to project-specific needs. Welcome to the program, Tesla.
Hello, Joanne. It's very nice to see you and talk to you today.
Tesla, you have a broad experience in the AEC sector for over 25 years now. Could you just give us a little rundown on your background in education and how you got into this design, technology, and sustainability space?
Well, thank you for the question, Joanne. And you're right. I've been in the AEC industry for over 25 years. I hold a bachelor's degree in architecture from the University of Honduras, Central America, and I'm almost done with a master's in interior design from UCLA Extension / Cal Poly. I'm also a CDT CSI certified, and I'm an active participant in the AIA, both at the local chapter and at the national level for the technology in architectural practice. And you mentioned that I have a real broad experience in my career. I started with very small commercial projects in different practice areas. And it was on a chronological order, but then I got the opportunity of working in mixed use projects, healthcare projects, life science, which is laboratories. And then I had the opportunity as well to work and transition to transit projects, airports, and now I'm working on sports practice area, supporting from the technology management and at least the last three that I mentioned of the practice area. And yes, I do have a very keen interest for sustainability. Over the last 4 years, I've been very embedded and how to implement tools that drives the effort towards a more sustainable future.
And what exactly inspires you to design in the architecture space?
What inspires me? I think it's the power of design inspires me in architecture, because I truly believe that through good design, we can actually create a better world, especially now that with the current climate crisis and climate change being at the forefront, and finding the right design through the intersection of technology and sustainability not only inspires me, but motivates me every day.
That's wonderful. You get up every day and want to get to work. What is design technology? How does that work?
Well, that's a good question. I get asked that question a lot lately, and design technology refers to the application of knowledge, transfer of skills and technique to create products, systems, or environments that serve the human needs and desires. It really is a lot of software, but also workflows and also communication skills in the way that we can use technology to develop common practice workflows to develop projects.
And do you design the software itself that aids this process, or do you apply software to your process, or a bit of both?
I don't create the software. I'm not a software creator. I like to call myself more like a pollinator, like a bee. Basically, what I do is I am a person that likes to learn. And when I see new technology, I dive in head front and learn everything I can about it. And then I try to apply it to the process and understanding the tool, which is the technology, and how can it be used to deliver projects, which is what we do in the AEC, you know, in the architectural engineering or construction. You always have a project and an end goal. So I like to optimize workflows, and I truly love the mentoring part. I truly enjoy helping others grow. And through that process, it just becomes easy to implement this technologies and make and weave it up as part of the process.
So the tools that you're using and training others to use, what aspects of sustainability are these tools optimizing or leading people and designs and results and outcomes towards sustainability? In what way?
Well, it's a complicated answer because there's not a one tool that does it all. There's many tools in the market, and it seems to be that every day we have a new sustainability tool, either for analyzing the operational carbon or the embodied carbon or for circularity. And there's even AI for using robotics in the construction. So it's complex because projects are complex in terms of workflow. I mainly focus in the embodied carbon lately because most of the items that need to be, or factors that we need to observe for operational, are the very front of the project. Like from the architectural point of view, orienting the building, taking the best orientation, taking, you know, making the building at the end more efficient. So then this trickles down into the systems, making the systems, which are the ones that make the building operate, running the lights or the HVAC system, more efficient, because these design decisions were taken up front. However, in the last 4 years, I've been focusing in tools that are studying embodied carbon because since we're in the built environment, there is a lot of efficiencies that are being done in terms of the systems for operational. But in terms of the upfront carbon, like others call it, is the carbon that is embedded in the materials that we select to build the buildings. So with that said, one of the first things we can do is measure how much embodied carbon is generated by the materials we select. Obviously, you probably heard that one of the biggest ones are in the structure. So then you work with a structural engineer to craft either design solutions to lower the embodied carbon in the structure, whether it's in the concrete or in the steel, or maybe you have design solutions in a building to be a mass timber building. So we're seeing a lot of that. But if we go deeper and deeper and start peeling this like onion little by little, we can also observe that a building, when it's first built, it about 94% of the embodied carbon is the building itself. And 6% of that 100% of the embodied carbon is the interiors. But one of the things that people don't realize is that the interiors get remodeled. Tenant leases are about the typical tenant lease is 10 years. And every 10 years, this building gets remodeled in the inside. So if we start adding that 6% over 60 years, by the end of the 6 year, we're talking about very close to 40% of the carbon emissions of that building are coming from interiors. So we're starting to see that not just the importance of the building, however, the importance of every single component that makes that building function, and it's a life cycle. And then what happens with these materials when they go into the landfills? Are they recycled? So it's measuring, having tools that measure this impact. Once you know how much is your impact, then you can start thinking of ways to mitigate it or reduce it. For that, there are many tools. However, many tools have gaps in between. So the data sometimes is not transferred from one to the other. So that's another opportunity that we can have in the design technology to solve those gaps, to be able to have a data that starts from an early concept all the way to the end of the project, and really have analyzed and make sure that we're really moving, not in just one project, but in all the projects, the needle in to the right direction, right? Is reducing carbon.
So do you take a multidisciplinary approach? And if so, I imagine you would. And who would be involved in that early stage of design?
That's a great question. Actually, every project should take a multidisciplinary approach to this challenge, especially because to build a building or a structure, you don't do it in isolation. You actually have to have many types of engineerings, like structural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, systems, engineers. And then you have all the little pieces, components that form that building, right? So you really have to work with all your consultants. You have to work with the client at the very beginning to have that buy-in to make sure that these processes and workflows are implemented in the project. And at the same time, you need to follow through with the contractor. You know, it doesn't get VE. So it really is shepherding the design intent all the way through.
Well, when you're with the client, you know, to get them to buy in, that's really important. And to do that early, can you run through the principles of the design that you might talk with a client about? And what do you think is the decision-making points for them as the client?
Well, we all know that clients come in with a challenge, and they always have a budget restriction. And we know that money is always a driver on projects. However, if we actually engage the client at the very beginning, right, and we have an approach and a message, in alignment with their goals, and we also have craft per se, like a charrette, like a eco charrette, which is very common these days, in which you can establish those goals early on. You can have a buy-in from the client from that side. However, sometimes clients don't see the benefit of sustainability because there is this misconception that sustainable design is more expensive. At the end of the day, if we design a properly oriented building, it's going to be more efficient from the system side. So along the 60 years of the life cycle of that building, the client eventually is going to end up saving money just by having a big reduction on their systems. If we look at from the other side, from the embodied carbon, I work in a project. It is a confidential project, but I'll give you some high-level numbers just to paint a picture of what kind of building we're talking about. It's a 13-story building, type 1A, which is concrete and steel, and it's about 500,000 square feet. in this particular project, we have an early engagement with a sustainability story revolving about reducing carbon emissions from the operational and the embodied carbon. And we all know that type one construction, the biggest contributor is concrete and steel as well. So we partner with the structural engineer. And this was crucial to provide the client with a performance-based structural design. And this was the biggest strategy was reducing the volume of concrete. Instead of providing a prescriptive solution, we provided as a team very simple strategies such of reducing concrete volume by one of them was the orientation of the beams. Instead of having a cross beam system, the beams were just going in one direction. And just with that move, actually, it helped reduce the volume of concrete, which inherently, concrete being one of the most expensive materials in the construction, reduces the cost. And once we got the client and the understanding of the ripple effect of just having a design that it is more in accordance to what the project is, not based on rules, it really helped get that buy-in, early buy-in from the owner.
There's a shift there between specifications and prescription to an outcome, which allows more flexibility and creativity, it sounds like.
That's correct. I think it's more like a partnership. You partner with your consultants, and they're the experts on the matter, right? I usually sit on the architectural side and, you know, coordination side. But it is partnering with your consultants and taking advantage of their expertise.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back after a short break. Here's a little bit more about Arcans. Arcans has a mission to advance the efficiency, quality, and profitability of project outcomes for its customers by providing best-in-class technology and services. If you're looking for a digitalization and sustainability-focused partner to help you achieve your goals, join the thousands of AEC and manufacturing customers globally who have turned to Arcans to start their journey toward a better built environment and smarter manufacturing. With more than 50 locations around the world, Arcans can connect you to the right technologies and expertise so you can improve your competitive position and increase profitability. Arcans has an industry expert to help you navigate the best pathway forward wherever you are on your digitalization and sustainability journey. Visit arcons.net to find out more. And now back to our conversation. So, Tesla, you mentioned that there was a project you're working on at the moment, confidential, but in a general way, could you describe what stakeholders are in the room at the early stage? Who needs to be there? What roles?
Well, that's a great question, because we brought this strategy at the very beginning, and it was on our kickoff meeting. And we had, you know, not all the projects at this early stage. It was the kickoff meeting for the schematic design. So concept was already done and the building was already designed in a good orientation. And there were terraces on the project and a great solution for Southern California climate. But in that first meeting, we had the owner representative. They brought a full team. They are very, very savvy owners, so they knew what they want. We had our structural team. We had our systems team, MEP, and also we had our vertical transportation. We had our sustainability group and experts, and we had a full room full of consultants. So that project was pursuing LEED Gold and also was pursuing Fitwel, just the basic on Fitwel. So there were some concepts of having a sustainable design from the very beginning and just bringing the story of how can we reduce the cost and this will drive the sustainability.
I presume you had some people from finance there too. Maybe.
there was no finance people. We did have our, you know, project coordinator and the, you know, the people that manage the project internally, but not from the budget side. From the budget side, in the room, we did have the contractor, which we talked about doing price estimates at key points of the project. So we were constantly checking on the cost of the project. So that was something that we were working really intimate with the contractor. And that was something that it was very well appreciated from the owner, because we had to keep the project real as well.
At what stage does procurement policy and decision-making come into the design?
Well, in this particular project, it was, we were having check-ins. We had check-ins of like budget when we finished concept design. We had a check-in at 50% DD, at 100% DD, and they are programmed to do other check-ins as they progress construction documents, even before issue for construction. This particular project, the contractor was already selected, so it's not the typical design, you know, the design bid build in which you bid when you finish the construction documents. So that's an advantage if you're working early with contractor, if it was not an integrated process delivery project delivery for this project. But we did have that benefit of having the contractor selected by the client, because it's a private project, and it was easy to weave it within the process, right? Because if you're working in projects that are more institutional, you go through the typical process and you have to finish the constructions or finish the documents before you get a price check.
That's right. And it can take a lot longer too. So the sustainability outcomes that were in terms of embodied carbon, reduced waste, do you have some numbers on what the targets are for those in this project?
Well, in this project, we were trying to get to the, to fulfill LEED requirements to start with. And, you know, if you do an embodied carbon check-in, you get a point for that. If you can reduce at least 10% of the envelope, you get a second point. And then if you include part of the interiors, there's a short list from LEED to target for the third point. However, in the structural part, just by the numbers they were run during design development, we were targeting to be around the 30% carbon emissions reduction.
And the client, when the client saw the actual real numbers, what was this reaction by the client?
It was very positive. It was really great because when they got the input of how much money they can save, they were in. But a couple of meetings in, when the numbers were presented and they were starting to see that there is a reality of like reducing carbon emissions. The other side of this is that this project was an office building, and they're targeting clients that for their anchor tenants to have, they usually have very high 20, 30 commitments already. So they're thinking to put it as part of their marketing packages and put it in, you know, making it part of their one more thing that they are providing by having this building with all the amenities that they're providing. So they're providing many amenities from the design part, It's a very flexible design. However, they were seeing it that they are also providing a building that has all the lead fit well, and also pursuing, well, you know, we're in California, so there are a lot of things that California does in terms of, you know, now in the new buildings, you have to have renewable energy. So you have to provide solar panels. They have very strict electric vehicle requirements. But there's a lot of money coming out from the federal in terms of grants. So that's other avenues that architects can pursue with their clients in terms of getting them educated. There's a lot of federal money coming down in terms of grants to help with the cost of renewable energy in their buildings and electric vehicles, especially for California.
Well, that's great to hear. And is the government offering grants for procuring particular materials that are more sustainable? Is there a policy around that with the U.S. federal government?
No, I'm not aware about that. I know that in California, this summer, it will be mandatory to have embodied carbon reductions for new projects. So that's something that's coming from the code's point of view. But I'm not aware if there's grants for the part of reducing embodied carbon so far.
So when it comes to success and measuring success, how are you measuring at the different milestones of a project, how successful how you're tracking?
Well, it's good to compare, right? That's why, you know, keeping the data organized. Buildings are, I call it like moving targets, right? They always change. So we know that we design something and during the process it's going to go over multiple iterations until we find the right design. So if you keep that data, and as you evolve that design, you keep checking the data and key milestones, you can be able to go back and compare them, especially if you're observing two solutions to the design. It's good to check these numbers one against the other. So then the design is not just focused from a design point of view, from an aesthetic point of view, from a cost point of view, but from a sustainability point of view as well. So it is becoming to be an extra layer of design, measuring design. Or should be.
And the tools, the digitalization tools can support that, measuring that aspect of sustainability?
Yes. The fact that we have technology solutions like tools, like you mentioned, they are able to keep the data and keep record of the data. And then once you keep the data, you can compare it or visualize it. Other types of tools that help you visualize it and compare it, maybe in a graph form, similar to what you can do like with Power BI, right? You can actually see bar charts and Gantt charts and compare the data and see if you are actually increasing the carbon or reducing the carbon in the projects.
So the BIM technology really is what we're talking about, can measure reduction of waste or efficiency of energy, anything else?
Well, the BIM technology, what it can do is like you can quantify the elements that are in the design. And then there are simple formulas to calculate the carbon out of those elements. So it's really basically a mathematical procedure that needs to happen in which you have quantity and how much volume of material X, what you are producing in the BIM model. You model it as long as you assign the proper material. Then you can connect this data to the databases of materials that are out there that have generated EPDs, and being able to do that mathematical conversion. Basically, it's the math is super simple. It's volume times global warming potential, which is kilograms of CO2 of each material. And that gives you the kilograms of CO2 that they are emitted by the material you are analyzing.
So these environmental product descriptions, EPDs, how are they, the data on those being shared in America?
Well, I think the biggest database right now that is held, it's held by EC3, which is a free tool that it's out there. They've been collecting EPDs from manufacturers. These EPDs are hard to read because they are generated by the manufacturer, and getting that information out of this PDF format of a declaration that they are declaring what are the impacts of that material to the environment. They're not the easiest thing to read. They're not formatted the same way, so they're not consistent. So I believe that EC3 has done a really great job of collecting them and shepherding that database. And what I've seen is that in the majority of tools that you can use to measure from the BIM model, so first, as architects, we produce a BIM model. As long as we're responsible of assigning the right materials to the right elements, then you can use external tools to do life cycle analysis from that model. But there has to be a clean process in there. And sometimes that doesn't happen. So that's part of where I come in, right? In the educational part, to show users that they will get more benefit of their BIM if they add certain data to what they've been used to model in order to extract that data and be able to connect it to a database like EC3.
That's wonderful. Really important work, Tesla. So as we close out our conversation today and you think about what you're doing and how you're in this intersection between sustainability and design technology, what excites you when you think future?
Oh, wow. That's a big question. It's really a big, big question. You'll have to ask me that question again.
When you think about the vision, your vision for the next 20 years, your own personal vision of where you see yourself with this intersection of sustainability and design technology, where is it going and what part are you going to play in the evolution of that?
Well, to me, you know, we are in a world that we have the opportunity to do positive change. And that's exciting. So it's really making sure that we see the urgency for sustainability and how can we help. It's exciting, but it also, it's inviting ourselves that if it's not us, then who? And if it's not now, then when?
These are important questions to ask. And, you know, as we navigate, you know, it's like we're driving forward. We need a roadmap. We can't really look behind in the mirror anymore. We have to keep looking forward. And if you had any advice for people with their own roadmaps, what would you say?
I would think it's just like climbing the Mount Everest. It's creating a strategy, the way to get to the top of Mount Everest. Sometimes creating a strategy will take years. Or do we throw our backpacks and just set out without a detailed plan, but still with determination, moving forward little by little? I believe if we do that, we'll get to the top. It might not be the straight path. It might not be the most perfect path. However, it will get us closer to the goal if we do a lot of littles on the way.
Very wise. Thank you, Tesla. And if anyone wants to talk to you more about how to collaborate, how would they get a hold of you?
I think the easiest way is to find me on LinkedIn. You know, I think LinkedIn has all my information and it's easier to just communicate that way.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know it's pretty late there where you are, and I wish you a very pleasant day tomorrow with your daughter. This podcast was brought to you by Archons. Archons is leading the digital transformation of the AEC and manufacturing industries by providing best-in-class technology solutions from world-leading partners and their own in-house development software from the Archons B-Smart portfolio for building, infrastructure, and manufacturing. Archons is a company that cares about creating and building a better world. Together, we are working with industry and environmental experts, providing forums and platforms through our Archons Think community to create conversations that matter to our future generations. We invite you to join in the conversation and participate in our Think community. Like and subscribe to Think Future to stay up to date with the latest innovations and conversations as we advance the digital journey for the AEC and manufacturing around the world. You can download our podcasts at archons.net or from your favorite podcast platform.